It's time for Midday's Best Books of 2014. Midday Associate Producer Michael Himowitz and Paula Gallagher, Baltimore County librarian and blogger, list their favorite works of nonfiction and fiction respectively from the last year, from romance and historical fiction to science and science fiction. This year's list includes the story of an ill-fated exploratory trip to the North Pole in the late 19th century, a murder mystery set in the Catskills, a poignant memoir by a former Baltimore Sun reporter about his disfigurement during the Vietnam War, and an in-depth study about what makes us laugh. Plus, we take calls from you, our listeners. What was your favorite read this year? Midday's Best Books of 2014, after the news. And welcome back to Midday Friday. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. Major news this week, of course, from the White House. President Obama moving to reestablish diplomatic ties with Cuba, ending 18 months of secret negotiations between the two countries. Mr. Obama is expected to talk about this historic shift in his year-end press conference scheduled for this hour. So NPR, we expect NPR to be cutting in at 1:30 into Midday. But so right at the top of the show here, we'll get started on our Midday's Best Books of the Year program. These are the books that we think really stood out this year from the worlds of fiction and nonfiction. Here with us to go through that, Paula Gallagher, librarian with the Baltimore County Public Library System at the Pikesville branch. She also writes about books for the library's Between the Covers blog, and she reviews books for the Adult Books for Teens blog, the Adult Books for Teens blog for the School Library Journal. Paula, it's nice to have you back on the show. Nice to see you again.
Thanks. Great to be here, Dan.
And joining us by phone is Midday's associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Mm-hmm. Michael Himowitz is on this show today because he reads many of the books for us in preparation for our author interviews throughout the course of the year. Mike's feeling a little bit under the weather today, so thank you very much for being with us despite that, Mike. How you doing?
Well, if my voice holds up, I'll be fine.
Okay. Well, I offered you an opportunity since you're going to handle the nonfiction for us and review some of the better books that we featured on Midday during the past year. If you want to get started with that, why don't you, Mike? Why don't you just jump right in here? As you look back on the year 2014 and the books we featured on Midday, which are the ones you liked?
Well, thanks, Dan. And just jump in on me whenever it's time for Paula to take her turn.
Okay.
We read a lot today about how difficult it is for wounded veterans to cope with their physical as well as their psychological scars. And Bob Timberg, one of the country's finest political reporters and authors, a retired Marine captain, and a longtime friend and colleague of Dan and me at the Baltimore Sun, has been living with these scars for almost half a century now. Bob was barely out of the Naval Academy and married for only a few months when he shipped out to Vietnam in 1964.
Hey, Mike, excuse me. Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to call you back and try to get a better connection so we can hear you more clearly on the phone line. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I do want us to be able to hear you. So can we try calling Mike back and get a better connection? The book he's talking about is Blue-Eyed Boy by Bob Timberg, who was a colleague of both Mike Himowitz and I when Mike worked at the Sun and Bob Timberg worked at the Sun. And I'm glad to hear him mention that. I do recommend that book, even though we have this personal and professional connection to Bob Timberg. He's quite a good writer. He was the author of the Nightingale Song. And then he came back finally with a memoir of his own experience in Vietnam, a book that we always thought Bob was going to write, and he finally did. He was on our show. I'll go to Paula Gallagher here because, Paula, there's another book about wartime that you have on your list that's fiction. It's classified as fiction, even though it's based on a lot of true stories that were told to Phil Clay, the author of Redeployment.
Yes, Dan. This was a collection of 12 short stories, and Phil Clay was actually a U.S. Marine. He was over in Iraq in 2007, and so he drew on his personal experiences. He came back and entered a writing program, and he has 12 different stories collected in Redeployment, and they're from 12 different points of view. He's looking at all different kinds of people who were over in both Iraq and Afghanistan, And he's really, you know, taking a good look at the human condition, and he wants people back home. You know, veterans from those wars make up such a small percentage of our population. He wants everybody who's back at home to really feel a small taste of what these guys felt over there and then what it felt like to try to reassimilate back at home.
You know, I was trying to remember why he fictionalized these stories. He felt not at liberty to share. He didn't want to pretend to be a journalist because he didn't have the absolute perfect details. I can't remember exactly how Phil answered that question.
He wanted to have a wider scope. He didn't want it just through his eyes. He wanted a lens of multiple people. And he felt if he had, and that's why he went with stories rather than a novel and stories rather than nonfiction. He wanted a broader scope.
It's an excellent writer. That is an excellent book, Redeployment. And Mike Himowitz mentioned Blue Eyed Boy, so we covered that. And do we have Mike back again?
I'm back here now.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's as good as it's going to get, Mike. It's not a great connection. Why don't you go through some of your titles for us, please?
Okay, well, I've talked once again about Bob Timberg, who was just 13 days from...
Mike, we covered that while we were trying to get reconnected with you. So let's move
on
to another title.
Next one is, let me say, one of the great things about reviewing books for Midday is the sheer variety of material that kind of just appears on my doorstep. This little nugget was in one of them, okay? A grasshopper walks into a bar and orders a martini. The bartender looks at the grasshopper and says, "You know, we have a drink named after you." The grasshopper says, "You have a drink named Marvin?" Well, if you wonder why some people think this joke is hysterical and others just don't get it, you can read one of the most interesting books we've run across this year. It's called Ha, that's H-A with an exclamation point, and its subtitle is The Science of When We Laugh and Why. Neuroscientist Scott Weems sees humor as a very serious business, or mostly anyway. Why do we laugh when Groucho says, "I never forget a face, but in your case, I'll make an exception"? Why do Abbott and Costello still generate chuckles with their Who's on First routine? Why do people like to hear Jerry Seinfeld talk about, like, nothing? Scott Weems argues that getting the point of a joke is a very complex cerebral activity. High-tech brain scans show that it activates the same region that we use when we solve problems. In fact, he says the smarter we are, the more likely we are to share a good joke. By the way, the world's funniest joke is in this book, so it's worth reading just for that. It's called Hot, The Science of Why We When We Laugh and Why, and it's available from Basic Books.
I want to ask you a question here. You also have a Brainstorm on here, The Power and the Purpose of the Teenage Brain by Daniel Siegel, also quite a good book. But some people will hear those titles, Mike, and think, or the subject, and think, well, this is kind of an academic treatment of this topic. It's based on a lot of research, and it's kind of dry. But you're recommending these because they're good reads.
Oh yeah, I don't write. If only a political scientist could read it, I don't even bother to recommend
it. Right, let me make that clear.
If I can understand it, then I recommend it.
Thank you, Mike. We hear that a lot from Mike sometimes when he reviews books that we get that come from what I would call academic press, publish or perish, you know, that kind of thing that comes from college professors. Even though the subject sounded interesting, Paula, they're written in a dry way. But Mike's recommending these because they're good reads. Let's go back to your list, Paula Gallagher. How about something from fiction from you?
I'm going to move from science to science fiction and tell you a little bit about a book called The Martian by Andy Weir. Andy Weir was an IT guy who started to write in his spare time, and he started to serialize this book online. And it's set modern day, but it's a modern day where NASA has sent three expeditions to Mars, manned expeditions. And he's part of the character in this book. His name is Mark Watney, and Mark Watney is part of that third expedition. And he and his colleagues are out on the surface of Mars, and this freak dust storm comes up, and it's so severe that he's hit with flying debris, and it knocks him down a hillside. And his colleagues think he's dead, and they've got to leave, and they don't take a body, so they leave. Turns out he's not dead, and now it becomes a survival story.
Well, it's pretty good. I like the sounds of that.
And luckily, this character is a biologist, and he's a mechanical engineer, and he's left with the habitat that was left behind that they were living in, so he's got some supplies. However, he's not going to have enough water. He's not going to have enough food. So he's got to kind of MacGyver his way through.
The Martian sounds like it'd make a good movie someday.
It, as a matter of fact, it is being made as we speak. Matt Damon is going to be playing that role. And we're pretty excited about it. This has been a favorite at the library. It's a favorite among techies. My husband really enjoyed this book, and Ars Technica, the site that he writes for, everybody there seems to have latched onto it. This one's a great one, just really across the ages, even for older teens.
The Martian by Andy Weir. Sean Gallagher, you mentioned, Paula's husband, he was on our show just on Monday. He's the Baltimore-based IT editor for Ars Technica, that website. Paula, let's take another title from you before we go back to Mike. How about this one, Bellwether Rhapsody, but Bellwether Rhapsody.
Okay, Dan, imagine if Agatha Christie wrote a novel and she set it in the hotel, which is the setting of Stephen King's The Shining. And that's a little bit...
Sounds good. Yeah,
we've got
good.
This old secluded Catskills hotel that's really run down. It's really seen better days. And we have a high school music festival that's being held here. So you have a teen appeal, but you've got adult characters. And there was a murder-suicide in one of the rooms 15 years ago. And one of the main characters happens to be checked into that particular room. And yet another apparent murder has happened.
Ooh. I like that. That's called Bellwether Rhapsody.
Bellwether Rhapsody.
You know, I once checked into a hotel in New Hampshire. And the person who checked me in at the desk told me that he was putting me into a room. And next to that room, there had been a murder. Now, why would you tell a guest coming in about such a thing? And they said that the room was haunted, too. How do you like that?
Not a good choice. The character in this book does not know that little bit of detail.
My kids were with me. They were small at the time. I didn't tell them what the desk clerk had told me. Here's a before we go back to Mike, some emails from our listeners about their favorite books of the year. From Mark, Mark and Duke in Reisterstown. Delicious by food writer Ruth Reichel is a novel that centers on a food magazine based in New York City. Besides interesting plot turns, which hold you to the book, her character development was very good. The references to wonderful food were an added bonus. Delicious by Ruth Reichel. And Paula's nodding. You're familiar with that one, too. Huh?
Yeah, she was the longtime restaurant critic for the New York Times. And then for Gourmet Magazine, she wrote her series of autobiographies. So this is her first foray into fiction. And it's a lighter but fun book if you're a foodie.
Another email from one of our listeners, whose name isn't on here, but says Redeployment by Phil Clay. A heck of a writer. The Cuckoo's Calling is the second choice here. The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith, pen name of J.K. Rowling. Oh, that's the J.K. Rowling. That's a book.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that one came out last year, but she's taking that same character in a series, and so The Silkworm is the second installment featuring that same character that came out in that book.
And The Silkworm came out this year?
Came out this year, yes.
Okay.
And I believe that's in development to make it to some type of screen.
We only ask folks favorite books of the year, not necessarily published in 2014, but he says of the first Rowling book, I've never read any of the Harry Potter books, but this one, this detective story, reads easily and enjoyable, and the detective, Cormoran Strike. Is that the name?
Cormorant Strike.
Cormorant?
Cormorant, like the bird.
Like the bird?
Yep.
Cormorant Strike is a one-legged Afghan war vet trying to solve a layered mystery in London, a most pleasant escapist novel.
It's a great character, and she's a very good plot developer.
Let's go back to Mike Himowitz, Midday Associate Producer, for more from his list of favorite nonfiction of 2014. Mike?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I read The Silkworm, and it's a pretty good book. She really, interestingly, has figured out the mystery form and done a very good job of doing it and laying out all the clues. And if you really want to puzzle it out, you'll find everything right there. I'd like to talk about, although it's another brain story, it's a very different one. And this is, if you've got a teenager or you have a kid who you expect to be a teenager or you're a teacher or someone else who deals with teenagers, or you wonder why you were just so awful as a teenager, there's a wonderful book called Brainstorm, The Power and Purpose of the Teenage Brain. It's by Daniel J. Siegel, a psychiatry professor at UCLA. And he explains why it is that teenagers take so many dangerous risks and turn everyday life into just such a soap opera. And, you know, the conventional wisdom is sort of raging hormones, but he says that it's really much more complex than that. The teenage brains are actually being chemically and neurologically rewired every day, and it's a process that leads to risk-taking, anxiety, and the moodiness that undoubtedly made you and me such a delightful adolescents. Siegel also says it's important to know that teens may want to loosen the bonds with their parents, but they don't want to cut them entirely, so you got to hang in there. For many teens, he says adolescence can actually be a period of intense creativity and that they can actually thrive and not just survive in it. This book is readable. It's got sensible advice, and it's notably lacking in psychobabble. It's called The Brainstorm, and it's available from Tarcher, which is a Penguin imprint.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Back to Paula Gallagher from the Fiction Shelf.
Some of these books I'm talking about, you'll hear on other people's lists. This is one I haven't seen on many other lists or any other list. It's called Never Home. And Never Home is a very slim novel. It's a Civil War story. And what makes this one different is it features a young Indiana housewife. Well, actually not housewife. She's a farm wife. And she realizes that somebody needs to go to war from their household. And she says, I was strong and he was not, so it was me who went to war to defend the Republic. And so she passes herself as a man and goes off to battle and finds out that she loves it. Not only that, she is a crack shot and she develops this reputation that extends beyond the regiment that she's fighting with. This was one of those great books that I would, again, also recommend to a younger audience. It's got a great, strong female protagonist. If they liked The Hunger Games, somebody who's more sophisticated might want to delve into some history and see an actual woman fighting a battle.
Never Home by Laird Hunt. And while I have you over on the Fiction Shelf, Paula, how about Euphoria by Lily King? What's the story there?
This one was just terrific. What Lily King did was to mine some of the events from the life of anthropologist Margaret Mead. And this book, I always look for a good hook. And the good hook from this one was we have the character who she's renamed now. She and her husband, who is Australian, they've been studying a particular tribe in New Guinea. And the tribe is just so brutal that they can't manage more than a few months with them. And so they fled this tribe and they run into a third anthropologist. And then we get some possibilities for intellectual melding and clashing and actually a love triangle amongst the three of them. This is probably my favorite of the year. I think it's about a little over 250 pages long and just beautiful writing, but really interesting issues, really brings you in to explore these people.
Euphoria by Lily King. Thank you, Paula. We'll go back to Mike Himowitz now. Michael, Paula just mentioned probably her favorite of the year, 2014, was that one, Euphoria. So out of your list of nonfiction from 2014, do you have a favorite or have you already mentioned it?
Well, there are a couple that I really liked, but I'd like to talk about one, actually, that she's talking about. This is about history that reads like fiction. That's how well written it is. It's one we actually did recently. It's called In the Kingdom of Ice.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the grand and terrible polar voyage of the USS Jeannette. And this is about a period that not that many people write about, the period between the Civil War and the end of the 19th century. And I just read in The Sun that, for example, that global warming aside, this is going to be one of the coldest winters in Maryland history. So I want you to sort of think of the worst blizzard you've ever experienced. We've had a couple of them. And then think how you'd like to be stuck in weather that's 10 times worse for two full years with 1,000 miles between you and civilization. Well, an author named Hampton Sides, who's a very fine popular historian, tells this tale. It's very little known today. It's about the USS Jeannette, which was a sailing steamer that was captained by a young naval officer named George Washington DeLong. He was financed by a wealthy publisher in New York, and he sailed in 1879 to find the Northwest Passage, which is a way to sail around Canada in warm water across the North Pole, and be able to reach Europe without going through the Panama Canal or around or Suez. And this has been the holy grail for years, and just now with global warming, it's actually becoming available and maybe actually useful. But in this case, they were trying to find their way, and despite the very best equipment and technology, the Jeannette became icebound for 2 full years. When she finally got loose, the pressure from the ice crushed her hull. So the crew set off in these tiny little boats, and when they broke up, they set off on foot through one of the most frightful landscapes imaginable. It's history that reads like a novel. It's adventure, it's thrilling, and ultimately very heartbreaking. But it's a piece of history that's actually been extraordinarily well documented.
All right. Michael, thank you very much. That's In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeannette. Hampton Sides, that author. Because we're short of time today, because of the president's press conference coming up in a few minutes, I'll say goodbye now to Michael Himowitz and wish him happy holidays, happy new year, and thank him for all his good work on Midday this year. And also to tell our listeners, if you want to see the complete list of nonfiction choices as best books of 2014, they're on the WYPR website or the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. Mike, thanks very much, and I hope you feel better soon.
Thanks. My pleasure.
All right. And Paula, back to you for a couple more fiction titles in the time that we have remaining.
Okay.
I was curious about Station 11. Would you just talk about that for a minute? Station 11.
Absolutely. Dan, a lot of novels that have been coming out lately are exploring the idea of a post-apocalypse. And this one is a literary novel that does it and does it very well by centering on a small group of people rather than the big picture. And in this novel, a flu, unlike any we've seen before, overtakes society. And for this, what happens when this flu hits is that people die off like flies. And so for the very few people who are left, what is life? And so this really looks at a world stripped of technology. Within a few days, there is no internet. There's no, and things start falling off. I didn't realize gasoline, for example, after 2 to 3 years is not usable. So you can have a stockpile of it, but it doesn't work.
So you like this book?
Very much so.
Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yes.
That right?
Uh-huh.
And Paula's got other titles here also on our website and on the Facebook page. The Invention of Wings, We Are Not Ourselves, The Paying Guests. Paula, one of our listeners, Alice, wrote in to say she really liked Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs. And also her second choice for the year was Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor's autobiography, My Beloved World, which traces her underprivileged childhood with her diagnoses of diabetes to her graduation from Princeton and Yale Law School, and ends before her tenure on the Supreme Court. All right, so we covered a lot of ground there in the time that we had for this hour. Paula, thank you very much for doing this for us again.
Thank you, Dan. I want to let listeners know that they can also go to bcpl.info to Between the Covers, and they can see more in-depth writing about these books that I'm talking about, and they'll be able to see a posting about these books this afternoon.
Between the Covers is the blog of the Baltimore County Public Library, and you contribute to that.
Yes.
Also, I wanted to say, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, probably my favorite writer, died this past year, and I've taken another stab at all of his books again, started reading all his short stories and novels again, and recommend that the writings of Gabriel Garcia Marquez to anyone who hasn't yet tried those. Let's see. We're coming up on the president's press conference now. This is President Obama's year-end press conference, where he's expected to talk about his announcement just from a couple of days ago about reestablishing diplomatic ties with Cuba. And that's going to be happening in about, we don't know when the president begins his press conference, but we do know that when the NPR will be taking coverage starting in just a few seconds here. I want to thank everybody for tuning into our midday today. I'm sorry it was a shortened hour, but we do have to make way for the White House and president's press conference. So please stay tuned for that. More midday coming up next Monday. We'll be with you starting again Monday at noon. So have a great weekend.